Welcome to the Beyond Sunday at WMPC podcast. This summer, we invite you to join us as we explore things we wish Jesus had not said. In week four of this six-week series, we will tackle Jesus' teaching on dealing with temptation. If your eye causes you to stumble, tear it out and throw it away. We hope you'll listen as Parish Associate Judy Yates Syker and Pastoral Resident Lee Hunter explore Matthew 18, 8 to 9. Well, hello. My name is Judy Yates Syker. I'm one of the parish associates here at White Memorial Presbyterian Church, and my conversation partner is Lee Hunter, our pastoral resident. We're looking forward to having a discussion today about a very strange passage from the Gospel of Matthew, a passage that definitely fits the theme of our summer podcasts, Things We Wish Jesus Had Not Said. This passage is found in Matthew chapter 18, and we're focusing on verses 8 and 9. So, hear the word. And if your hand or foot causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to enter life maimed or lame than with two hands or two feet to be thrown into the eternal fire. And if your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out and throw it away. It is better for you to enter life with one eye than with two eyes and be thrown into the hell of fire. Well, Lee, this is going to be interesting.
It surely is, Judy.
I always think a great place to start is with some context. So let's remind our listeners about how this particular passage fits not only into this chapter, but also in the Gospel of Matthew as a whole. How it fits in the chapter is this. Chapter 18 begins with the disciples questioning Jesus about who is greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And he responds, not by naming some heavy-hitting followers or doers of great deeds, but rather by pointing them to a child and informing them that unless you turn and become like children, you will never enter the kingdom. So in true Jesus form, he starts not with who is the greatest, but who can even enter the kingdom. It's a great little scene when he pulls the child out and speaks to the disciples. We call this an enacted parable. But he goes on from there and informs them that whoever humbles him or herself like a child, this one is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. So he's answered the question, and then he quickly moves on to warn them about the consequences of causing one of these little ones to sin. And we begin to get the message from these verses. It won't be good. It's better to be found at the bottom of the sea than to lead one of these little ones astray. This is such an important admonition that he then goes on to advise them to get rid of whatever it is in their lives causing them to sin. Cut off your hand, your foot, pluck out your eye. Rid yourself, in other words, of whatever is the issue. Well, that helps a little, maybe, but I don't know about you. It still isn't exactly clear to me what's going on. So maybe we'll continue in this effort of setting the context to see how this passage fits into the gospel as a whole. So you might remember that the Gospel of Matthew is often viewed as having five teaching blocks. There's a lot of ink that's been spilled over how they came to be and exactly what they are, and that's for another day and a whole nother podcast. But these five blocks of teaching are not difficult to locate if you're a careful reader. They each have what we might call, in musical terms, an intro and an outro. So, for example, at the beginning of the first of these teaching blocks, we read this. When Jesus saw the crowds, he went up the mountain, and after he sat down, his disciples came to him. And then he began to speak and taught them, saying, and then the chapter proceeds. And our first teaching block begins. And it's chapters 5 to 7, and it's referred to as the Sermon on the Mount. So as we get toward the end of chapter 7, we read this. Now when Jesus had finished saying these things, The crowds were astounded at his teaching, for he taught them as one having authority and not as their scribes. So intro, outro, teaching block one. And we have five of these throughout the Gospel of Matthew. The other blocks include chapter 10, which we call often the missionary discourse. Chapter 13, the parables discourse. Chapter 18, our chapter, known by many as community rules or rules of discipline. And then the final teaching block is comprised of chapters 24 and 25, and that is the apocalyptic discourse. So chapter 18 that we're thinking about today is one of those five teaching blocks. And in this particular portion of the gospel, we find Jesus teaching the disciples how to live together, as disciples, how to live together here on earth in a manner befitting and mirroring the kingdom. It seems to me he's busy doing this to prepare them mm-hmm. for how to live together once he is no longer with them. Mm-hmm. So here in chapter 18, we find advice and instructions on how to live together, how to forgive one another, how to restore someone who's fallen away from the community. And so this is where we find ourselves today. But knowing the immediate context of chapter 18 and the larger context of the gospel itself, I'm still wondering about these harsh statements, and I wonder what in the world we do with them. It seems to me that it's apparent to all of us who read this that these verses that we're focusing on are hyperbole at its finest, and it's such a radical idea that it stops us in our tracks. Cut off your hand, cut off your foot, pluck out your eye, that seems drastic. But I don't think many of us would spend a lot of time arguing that Jesus is actually teaching self-mutilation. And as I read over these again and realized yet again what amazing hyperbole this all is, I thought maybe we should remind ourselves to be careful not to dismiss these verses because they're so outrageous. Mm. We know Jesus wouldn't say that. He doesn't really mean cut off your hand or your foot or pluck out your eye. Because I think we can and we must take them seriously even if we don't take them literally. Mm-hmm. And then what does that mean? I think in this first part of chapter 18, it's significant to note that if we read it carefully, after he's made the point early in chapter 18 about a redefinition of greatness with his enacted parable, if you will, of the child, and he calls him this little one, there's one word he uses for that, which is the word for small child. That's just the word that he uses. And it's paideion, if that matters to anybody besides me. It's a great word. But when he moves in verse 6 to shifting the emphasis slightly, he starts to use a different word for little ones, mikron, and we get the feeling that, oh, maybe we're no longer talking about this little child or mm-hmm. a little child. We're talking about little ones in the faith, people who have come to believe in Jesus, but who, like a child, are vulnerable and innocent and easily manipulated, and they are being warned not to be a problem for them. And it's after this switch that he sort of pulls out all the stops and makes his point with really great hyperbole. I love it that he says, very matter-of-factly, I think, there'll always be temptation in the world. Mm. There'll always be this. But woe to the one who brings it. Mm. Woe to the one who causes it. And I think that's very clear. I think there's another fun word to look at in these passages. I think Greek is such a colorful and expressive language. It's fun to note the significance in passages. And the word that captured my attention in addition to little ones this time is the one that gets translated sin in many mm-hmm. English languages, temptations in some. The verb form of it is sometimes translated in English as causes one to sin, or temptations, brings temptations, or causes one to lose one's faith. That's a more broader, more of an interpretation than a translation, mm-hmm. I think. But I think it's helpful to remember and understand that the verb form is scandalizo, and the noun form scandalon, which is kind of any action that leads to sin or a downfall. These words are used 6 times in 3 verses. Hmm. So you know that that's something important that he's trying to say to us.
Yeah. Is that where we get scandal from, Judy?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It is. Yeah. It certainly mm-hmm. is. So these words for stumbling or stumbling block is mm-hmm. another way to translate them. And I think for many of us, I think that's a better word picture. I mean, mm-hmm. it just sin is, we understand to a point, but it's rather nebulous. But stumble, to cause someone to stumble, to be the stumbling block, mm-hmm. that's all wrapped up in all of these verses. And I love that he goes in here from admonishing them not to cause a little one to sin, not to be a part of the problem that is always going to be in the world. And then he turns from this sort of exterior action to interior action, from acts that are harmful to someone else to some real self-examination, mm-hmm. which is what's underlying, I think, the passages for today that are so difficult to kind of swallow. I think maybe what he's saying is better to do without the cause of temptation, however much we might like it or need it. You know, you don't want to mm-hmm. get rid of your eye. It's nice to have both of them. Mm-hmm. But it's better to do without some of that than to risk a life of no faith. So, Lee, mm-hmm. what do we do with these verses? I mean, besides realizing that they're hyperbole, hopefully taking them seriously. Is this a passage that can say anything to us today?
Well, I was going to ask you, what's the good news here? And we were talking earlier about how this passage is not in the lectionary. A lot of the commentaries that we read skip right over it because they just don't really want to deal with it. So we're in good company, I think, to not really know what to do with this particular text. This is kind of coming up in my head, that what a contradiction to what Paul says about you are members of one body and every part has a job to do. This is a real, this feels like a real shift from that language of the body. Yeah. Judy, what do you think that Matthew, the writer of Matthew, is doing here? Are there concerns about Matthew's community that are kind of coming through the words of Jesus here and the early followers? What do you think?
That's a great question. And of course, I don't know the answer to that. But in mm-hmm. my imagination, I think that some of the complexity of chapter 18, and scholars have a lot of things to say about chapter 18, in that it doesn't hang together. I've mm-hmm. read a number of folks who have said, we're not sure how he flows, you know, this writer that we call Matthew, who is a wonderful writer, but in 18, it's hard to see how the various pieces fit together. And as I was thinking about that and reading over this for today, it seemed to me that either Jesus, and it doesn't matter to me which one, either Jesus, if he presented this all of a piece, or Matthew, who is trying to get this message out all of a piece, mm-hmm. had so many things that he wanted to say that we're not yet to the apocalyptic discourse, mm-hmm. so we haven't come to the sort of end times, but instruction for those who are trying hard to live together as a community in a situation in which it's difficult. They're the minority, mm-hmm. and I think it's not a stretch to say dangerous mm-hmm. to be a part of this community. So how do we hold together? How do we keep each other accountable? how do we keep ourselves accountable, mm-hmm. and how do we maintain that sense of community? Now, that's right. stretching beyond the verses for today, mm-hmm. but I think when you look at it and try to make sense with what comes before and what comes after, we jump to forgiveness, and we jump to, mm-hmm. you know, how many times should I forgive somebody, and do yeah. you remember, and what if one goes astray, and
right.
it feels in some ways very piecemeal, mm-hmm. and in another way, it feels like a little bit, you mentioned Paul, mm-hmm. a little bit like the pattern that Paul uses in his letters, the parenetic material, which is a great biblical studies word, but it's last minute do's and don'ts. Mm-hmm. Like when you leave the house, mm-hmm. when I left the house many long years ago, you know, my mom and dad would say, put a dime in your shoe so you can call us if you need to. Mm-hmm. Now we tell them, don't forget to charge your phone before you go. But,
right.
you know, that last minute details, last minute advice, that kind of is how 18 felt to me. You know, it's just the community needs to hear, and they need to hear this, and they need to hear this, and they need to hear this
yeah.
in order to stay community.
Yeah.
That was a long answer to your question, but that's where my little brain took me when
that's
I was
okay.
thinking.
That's okay. Yeah, yeah.
But I come back to, all right, what does that mean to us today?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're still a minority, but not in the same way.
Right.
I mean, I don't think that we largely feel endangered mm-hmm. as a minority.
Yeah. I think one of the things to think about, this very earliest community, the disciples and the early followers of Jesus, like these are people who are coming from different faith backgrounds and different family structures. And so the kind of, you know, don't put a stumbling block in front of someone, you know, they have communities that might very easily want to manipulate them, or they're trying to figure out what it is that they believe and what this community looks like. And mm-hmm. so, you know, now that we live in sort of a more, at least us here in America, in Raleigh, North Carolina, we live in a pretty Christian community, and that, you know, that we don't have the same kinds of other influences coming to lead us in a different direction. So I don't know. I think I don't know quite what to do with that, but I don't know. I don't know, Judy. I don't know what this means for us today.
This is a curious text. Well, so I think it's very honest for us both to say, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And to keep the discussion going, because I think what I hope for those who are listening is for them to go back and look at this again and to just sit with it for a while. And I what kept coming back to me is, this is too easy to dismiss.
Mm.
You know, I can mm-hmm. be dismissive of this because Jesus never would have said that.
Right.
Well, if he did say this, I don't think then he meant it literally.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I'm willing to take this figuratively, what is it in my life that is causing me to stumble?
Mm-hmm.
What is it that's getting in the way? And it may be something that feels as necessary to my life as a hand or a foot or an eye. And I need to be willing to let that go. You think that could be a way of looking at this?
Yeah, something is essential to you, but that's actually getting in the way of your faith and your relationship
right.
to God and to other people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in some ways, I think that's a harder ask than to ask us to stop being stumbling blocks or not be a stumbling block mm-hmm. to someone else. I think, okay, I can try to fashion my life in such a way that I am not in the way of anyone else's faith journey,
mm-hmm.
that I am not part of the problem. But it's a much harder ask to look within myself and to say, okay, how do I keep my journey faithful?
Yeah.
And what is it that I think is keeping me from that?
Mm-hmm.
And am I willing to get rid of it if it's one of those things that on the surface looks very essential?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I think also thinking about little ones, you know, we might be talking about folks who are new to the faith, new to the way, if you will, and the early sort of passion and excitement tends to fade after a while, mm-hmm. and as you sort of come to terms with really the commitment of a long-term life of faith and a long-term following of Jesus. And so easily things come and they get in the way of our journey, and mm-hmm. we prioritize different things, and other things feel essential to us than what is actually true and what is actually essential. Yeah, because this is a long haul, folks. We are we are on this road and through hills and valleys. We are journeying. We are in our own faith journey with God through good times and bad, through the wilderness. We're on this journey, and so we have to keep putting one foot in front of another and try not to stumble on the way. Yeah.
And not to be in anybody else's way.
Right.
as they are walking. I mean, and I think that when we think about it like that, then as we look through the rest of 18, which I know everyone listening is going to want to do, they're not going to want to stop with verse 9. They want to keep reading right all the way through chapter 18 so that you can see what's going on there. There's a lot of good advice in there about how to be in community and how to live a life of forgiveness. It's a lot of good advice, whether or not there's great segue between the sections. You know, we'll give Jesus and Matthew a pass on that.
That's true.
One last thing. We have this wonderful title, I think, for our summer podcast series, Things We Wish Jesus Had Not Said. Why do you think we wish he hadn't said that?
I mean, I don't want to cut off my hand.
Really?
I can tell you that.
How about your foot?
My foot, I think I could lose, but
yeah. Not your hand.
Yeah.
Not your hand.
Yeah.
It's a real call to accountability, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And a real call to introspection. And I think that oftentimes it's easier to be doing than to be thinking.
Mm.
To be active and doing good deeds, and nothing wrong with that. But I think we are all called to some self-analysis, to some introspection. And it's in those quiet moments, in that quiet little corner of your room, that if you allow it, there are parts of our lives that come to light.
Mm.
And it's in our best interest to think about what is and isn't helping us advance on that journey.
Yeah.
And that's a very serious question, and I think more often than not tend not to want to get stuck in those places, because we might just find that one of those things is something that we think is essential and we're not sure we want to give it up. I don't know.
Yeah. I can't lie to you too, Judy. I think part of the thing that feels sticky for me is just the, you know, it's better to do this than to be thrown into hellfire, you know.
Yeah.
That feels uncomfortable to me, too.
Yeah. Yes. It's not a great picture that gets painted.
You know, dear listener, see me and Anne's podcast about hell from a few months ago.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So it sounds like we're going to continue to wrestle with this passage. I mean, there is no neat and tidy resolution here.
No, and that's true for a lot of the scriptures. I mean, it's lovely when we find passages that flow so beautifully and that feel like a good warm blanket, and we're so grateful for that. But you're right. This is a tough one, and there are a lot of them in the text if we take them seriously. And so I think we should do that with this one, not just write it off because it's such hyperbole, but to look beyond that and see, what is the message here? And it may come to each of us a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. And that's okay, because it's the living word. And that's how it works in our lives. Mm-hmm. So if you were hoping for a clear conclusion and solution to this strange passage, well, Lee and I give our apologies. But we don't apologize long, because what follows is an invitation to you to read and think and ponder this very unusual passage from Matthew. So thanks for listening to our ramblings and our ponderings, and we hope you will do some of your own. And we invite you to join us for the next podcast, when we will tackle another passage that we wish Jesus had not said.